Tweet at Today SOR.
Change is on the way in a system which allows insurance companies to reduce compensation awards to take into account the payment of social welfare benefits arising out of accidents. Right now, there is no mechanism for the government to claw that money back, but all will change from the 1st of August next, which of course is less than a fortnight away. The problem is that insurance premiums will go up as a result. So what will this legislation mean, and what does it mean for business as well? Mark O'Connell is with me, practicing barrister who specialises in public liability and in employer liability litigation. Mark, first of all, it's not going to make any difference, is it? Or maybe it is, to the amount of compensation that people who suffer injuries receive.
No, it won't. What it will do is allow the state to claw back millions of euros each year, which they pay out in social welfare benefits which arise out of personal injuries actions. Now, the clawback isn't from the punter, from the customer, as they're called in the Department of Social Protection. It's they're clawing it back from the insurance companies. So up to now, the insurance companies have been sort of piggybacking, in a sense, on the fact that some of their claimants are receiving social welfare entitlement, say a disability allowance after breaking a leg in a trip and fall case. They don't pay out for that because the department is already paying out. Now the department is saying, hang on a second, that's going to change. We want that money back before this case proceeds to settlement. And one very important point, it's not just insurance companies, they're called compensators. Now compensators, invariably, they are insurance companies, but a lot of people aren't insured. The state, for instance, doesn't have an insurance company. CIE doesn't have an insurance company. So that phrase compensator should be a key one.
So if let's just say if you have an accident and your capacity to work is restricted or limited or ended by the accident, you then are entitled to a disability payment. But that is factored into the overall award you get from the compensator.
Yes. Say, for argument's sake, take the case of Sean Citizen. He has a, say, for argument's sake, he breaks his leg and he can't work for 2 years. He has a loss of earnings claim for, say, 50,000 euros. And he's in receipt of social welfare, say, an illness benefit as a result of that. Up to now, the insurance companies have been able to pretty much take advantage of that fact, and they don't compensate him for the fact that he is being compensated by the state. Now that's going to change.
How much is the state hoping to recoup as a result of this change?
Well, there are no firm figures on it, but they reckon that 22 million could be recovered in a full year. And what's that going to mean? Certainly the compensators and mainly the insurance companies aren't going to be happy with that. They're going to try and obviously deal with that.
Yeah, we'll talk to Pat McDonough, the prominent businessman who has got quite an amount of experience in these matters in a few minutes, Mark. But where did this idea come from? Was it some sharp-eyed civil servant came up with this, or is it something that has already been put into place in other states?
No, in fairness to the insurance companies, this has been something of a sort of Damocles hanging over their heads for a few years. It exists, the provision exists in Northern Ireland, and it exists in England, where certificates have to be got by the compensators before cases go to trial. So in a sense, there was an air of the inevitability about this. So it hasn't come from nowhere. It's been coming for a while.
And are there complications that could arise and make things more difficult, either for the insurers or for the claimants? Let's say there's a split liability in a case, for instance.
Yeah, well, I mean, that'll be quite straightforward. Say, going back to our case of Sean Citizen, if the courts decide that he's 50% liable for the accident, he contributed to his own negligence, so to speak, then they will say, if there's a 50-50 percentage split on liability, the insurance company, assuming there's one in place, will pay 50% of the illness benefit he receives, right? No more than that. Now, the state won't come and take away the other 50% from him, but the split will be in accordance with the liability as decided by the court or out of court by the parties.
And are there implications as well for what are called all-in settlements?
Yes. Now, this is where the insurance companies won't like this. They have for a long number of years now, they like the idea of an all-in settlement. They pay one cheque to cover general damages, special damages, the solicitor, the barristers, the doctors, the engineers. They don't get involved in any rows in relation to taxing costs, etc. That it's not going to disappear, but it'll be much more difficult because the recoverable benefit, as it's called, will have to be defined in an all-in settlement, and the Department of Social Protection will want that back even in an all-in settlement. So some of the beasts in the forest you referred to earlier, they'll be busy trying to find their way around the light on the other side.
I don't know if that description would apply to the person on the line now. Pat McDonough, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You obviously have several premises with Supermax, and I think you have other interests as well. And you've been prominent in calling and in fighting, in fact, for an end to the compensation or the compo culture. But if 22 million, as Mark mentioned earlier, was to be recouped or clawed back from insurance companies, it has to come from somewhere. So might it be from people like yourself and paying premiums?
Yeah, well, obviously, at the end of the day, I suppose it goes back to the insured party. So whether that's motor vehicles or whether it's business or whether it's household or whatever, you know, the insured party is paying for it at the end of the day. And ultimately, I suppose, the customer is paying for it because it has to be added on to somewhere along the way. So, as I say, I think I heard Mark say that this is operating in the UK and maybe on the continent as well. But I can see some difficulties arise with it because, as you mentioned, there are cases that are settled out of court. And, of course, a lot of the legal profession prefer to have that settled out of court rather than contest the trial. And in some cases, obviously, insurance companies as well. So I don't know how that's going to work out. And I don't know how it's going to work out in relation to, because you have sometimes multiple claimants who have maybe 2, 3, or 4 or even 5 or 6 claims running at the one time. So I don't know how that's going to work in that situation. But at the end of the day, it's going to add on to the premium. And as I've often said before, you know, insurance companies are really only bankers. They give you a loan to pay the claim, and then they claim it back over the next few years.
Pat, I think it's over 7 years now since you launched a campaign along with others to clamp down on people making false or exaggerated claims for personal injuries. Has the situation come back under control, in your view?
Well, in our own particular case, yeah. I mean, coincidentally, after that particular event at the time, you know, we had within a month about 10 requests from the legal profession wondering had we video evidence in relation to their claims.
You better give us a bit of backfill there, Pat. You managed to get, I think this was shown up on, was it on a primetime programme?
Correct,
some video evidence, yeah?
Video evidence of some a guy throwing water on the floor of the toilet and then slipping on it and etc., you know? So after that, as I say, so we had a huge reduction in claims for the following number of years. But I just noticed again, and even in our own situation, we would have seen an increase in claims pretty much since the recession hit. And I noticed actually on the personal injuries assessment board, they have said that there's an increase of 25% in claims over the last 7 years.
Speaking of which, the PIAB, Personal Injuries Assessment Board, do you think it has worked well? Do you think it's been the answer to some of the complaints?
Well, of course, the Personal Injuries Assessment Board only give awards to cases that are non-contested, where there's no liability has been agreed. But I do notice actually in the last number of years that where you have the legal profession going to their clients and saying, well, listen, I can get you more than you can get from the Personal Injuries Assessment Board. Because of this, I think the Injuries Board has increased their awards over the last number of years. I think it's to try and compete maybe to a certain degree with the legal profession who are promising their clients that they get them a lot more if they take it to court, etc. Of course, that's only to increase their own fees and get more fees from that. So, yeah, it's a situation that keeps on rolling. But I think, you know, overall, I think the Personal Injuries Assessment Board has done a good job.
Mark, you're shaking your furrowed brow at certain moments there.
Yes, well, I mean, that's a line that's put out quite a lot, which I think should be refuses the advice that people get when they go to a solicitor or a barrister in relation to an injuries board award is dispassionate and it's objective and it's nothing to do with
any
self-interest that they might have. And that case isn't put forward enough either.
Mark, I totally disagree with you there. We're talking about cases here that are either fraudulent or exaggerated. And I've never seen from a solicitor in all my time. Have I lost you?
No, keep going. Yeah, come on.
I've never seen in all my time a claim either understated. I've mostly seen them over-exaggerated. Or, as I say, sometimes they're even totally fraudulent entirely.
Well, the courts
so
can filter out those claims.
I from the experience that I have that in the last 35 years that I would agree with you whatsoever.
Well, the courts have their own mechanisms of dealing with exaggerated claims, and they do from time to time throw cases out that where there's evidence of exaggeration. And there's a lot of scaremongering going on, and it's sponsored by the insurance industry. And I have, personally speaking, as a practitioner, I resent it because it impugns the role that people like myself play in the resolution of these disputes. There are fail-safes there for the insurance industry and for compensators, you know, if they feel that there's an exaggerated claim being made, they use personal private investigators. There are provisions in the Personal Injury Civil Liability Act which can weed out exaggerated claims, and they are often relied on and they work.
Well, in my experience, there has been a cozy cartel, you could say, operating there between some of the legal profession. I'm not saying all the legal profession by any means, but some of the legal profession, and indeed some doctors. And indeed, to a certain degree, maybe even when it goes to court, that the main objective of the legal profession when it goes to court is who's going to pay my costs, who's going to pay my expenses, etc. And, you know, whatever happens after that happens. So the longer the case goes on, and the more obviously that they can get in compensation, the bigger the fees they can charge.
Finally,
so, Mark,
that's not always
the case.
That's
why the Personal Injuries Board was set up in the first place, because it had gone totally out of control.
Well, it hasn't. In fact, you'll find that a lot of compensators are, even despite the fact that the Injuries Board exists, they're approaching claimants before claims go to the Injuries Board. So, Pat, you can't have it both ways, and that's
that's
exactly
that,
what's
Mark?
Happening.
Why do you think they're doing that?
They're trying to save money themselves, and the Injuries Board isn't the panacea for all their problems. It was never going to be, but you know, you can't erode people's rights to take a claim if they have been injured as a result of somebody else's negligence. And this is
nobody
what it's about.
Is talking about.
I think people are not saying
claims.
You, but there are certain compensators and, you know, proprietors are stepping over the line. They'd like to see a situation where, you know, if people suffer injuries, then that's their own fault, and sure. You know, be done with them. That's the line that has to be observed here, and I don't think it is being.
And why do you think, Mark, we have the worst record in the world for claims? We're even beating the Americans.
Well, I don't know.
I run business, as I say, in America, and I have business in Northern Ireland, and the Republic of Ireland has the worst record for claims.
Well,
I don't know
what research you're referring to. The worst record in the world sounds a very grand, big statement, but I don't know what that means. What statistics is that based on?
It's based on the number of claims per 100,000 people.
Well, I'm not aware of that research, but I don't think you can get away from the fact that, you know, people are entitled in this
absolutely
jurisdiction to
nobody
take
nobody is
cases.
Talking about people not genuine claims, and there are accidents that occur, and we're all aware of those. And nobody's talking about those. It's about the fraudulent or exaggerated ones we're talking about.
On that note of agreement, or at least that's what we'll call it, we'll leave it there. Pat McDonough, Chief Executive of Supermax, and Mark O'Connell, Barrister at Law. Thank you both for being with us. Back with more after the break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.